Let's open our Bibles to 1 Chronicles, chapter number 14, and we're going to start at verse 13 in a moment. The parallel is from 2 Samuel, chapter 5, and I think it's verse 22, something like that. The situation is this. David has been king over Judah for 7.5 years, so we're actually in his 8th year as king. That actually started probably in the fall of 1010 BC. Then, during that period of time, he became the king over United Israel as well. We're not exactly sure when in that period, because of the 2 years of civil war at the very beginning of it, and then some situations that were probably tough revolving around the assassinations of Abner and of Ishbaal. But eventually, he does become king over United Israel, and he decides that what he really needs is a capital city that's never been associated with any of the tribes of Israel, and which is more centrally located. And Jebus, the city of that we know of as Jerusalem, fit the bill perfectly. It was right there at the border between Judah and Benjamin, and it had been under the control of Jebusites or Canaanites ever since the time of Israel's occupation of the land. So he takes it over. Joab, his nephew, who is also his commander, manages to do it by climbing through a water crevice. But once he gets the city of Jerusalem, he decides he needs to bring the Ark of the Covenant there because it's, you know, the new capital city, and he runs into a problem with that. We'll get back to that in a moment. But the Philistines evidently are triggered by the capture intact of the city of Jerusalem. And so they come up and pitch their encampments in the Valley of Rephaim, the Valley of the Giants, which goes at an angle to the southwest out of the Jerusalem area. And so David goes and fights with them, beats them, sends them packing, captures their idols, burns their idols. And evidently during that whole episode, three of his guys went down to Bethlehem and fought against a detachment of Philistines that direction as well. So we've talked about all of those things. Now we read this, 1 Chronicles 14, 13. And the Philistines yet again made a raid in the valley. So they basically regroup. It seems to be part of the whole same campaign of the Philistines in this general vicinity. So they regroup back to the Valley of the Giants, the Valley of Rephaim. Verse 14. When David again inquired of God, so he's been checking in with God through the high priest's use of the Urim and the Thummim. The indication seems to be that he's back at Jerusalem when the Philistines come back into the valley again. So he asked God, should I or shouldn't I take him on again? So God said to him, you shall not go up after them. So the answer, the first time that David asks, is don't take them on. Now what we find out, though, in further communication with God, David is instructed to do something different. It says, go around and come against them opposite the balsam trees. Now, This is a little bitty textual thing right here. The reason our English Standard Version is used in the idea of balsam trees here is that the literal wording here is the weeping trees. And they are assuming that this is a reference to the balsam trees which weep the balm, or the sap that becomes the balm that comes from a balsam tree. I don't think so. And some of the other versions have used mulberry trees here because the text does use a word that is sometimes connected with the mulberry tree, the white mulberry tree, I think. Josephus, who is our first century conservative Jewish author, his history, his Antiquities of the Jews at this point, which represents Jewish tradition, says that that what's being referenced here is simply a group of trees that's called the weeping trees. And so it's a location inside the Rephaim Valley. And so David is basically told, don't take them on from the front, you know, coming out of Jerusalem and heading southwest and then taking them on. Go all the way around them covertly and wait in this specific little area called the Weeping Trees and wait for a signal from God. Verse 15, what's that signal? When you hear the sound of marching in the tops of these weeping trees, then go out to battle, for God has gone out before you to strike down the army of the Philistines. So he's supposed to go around and approach from the southwest behind the Philistines. And he will wait until he hears the sound, apparently, of the angelic army that's going to be going against the Philistines. And so he does. David did as God commanded him, and they ended up striking down the Philistine armies from Gibeon to Gezer. Second Samuel passage has from Geba to Gezer. The two words are very similar in the way that they look in the Hebrew, so there could be like a spelling problem between a couple of different manuscripts. But it would appear, based on this, that when David attacks the Philistines from the south, from their rear, they immediately panic and start running off to the north, and then they hang a left down the valley that heads down to Gezer so that they could get back down to the flatlands of the Mediterranean plain and then get back to Philistine territory. Because David will be actually blocking them from getting back into Philistine territory from the direction they came. And that takes care of this threatening incursion of the Philistines against the new capital city of Jerusalem. And so verse 17 tells us, the fame of David went out into all the lands, and he who is brought the fear of him upon all the Goyim, upon all the nations. So those things apparently all happened within just a few months after taking Jerusalem in the beginning of 1009 BC. That's the best guess that I have for the chronology here. But it then shifts our attention back to the problem that David had earlier in the year. And that was when he tried to bring the Ark of the Covenant up, God struck out and killed Uzzah when he touched the Ark. Now, the reason it happened is because the Ark was up on an ox cart, and it kind of wobbled when the oxen took a bad step, and he reached up to try to steady it and ends up dead. And so David panicked. First, he was mad because he was trying to do something good and God did this. But then he, I guess, began to think, well, what will God do against any of us that have the Ark of the Covenant around us if we do something wrong? So he had the Ark of the Covenant taken off to the side of where the incident happened, to the house of a man named Obed-Edom. Now, I want you to turn at this point to, it's going to be 1 Chronicles 15 in a moment, but I want to read to you from 2 Samuel 6:11. The ark of he who is remained in the house of Obed-Edom, the Gittite, for 3 months, and he who is blessed Obed-Edom and all his household. And so this was told to King David. He who is blessed the household of Obed-Edom and all that belongs to him because of the ark of God. So after about 3 months, David gets this news after he's taken care of the Philistine incursion. Things are going fine with Obed-Edom. In fact, things are going very well with Obed-Edom where the ark of God is. He's having a very blessed time. And so David begins to think that maybe they can bring the Ark of the Covenant, God's throne, to the new capital city as long as they do it the right way. So we have a repentance, if you will. Remember, repentance is all about changing the way you think, bringing into alignment with God's way of thinking. And by that, you will then do things God's way. Let's go to 1 Chronicles 15. David built houses for himself in the city of David. Now, that's an overarching statement. Once he took over the city intact, he didn't destroy it at all. He takes it over intact, and he begins renovating it to be his capital city. And that includes remodeling or adding on to the main building in the north that becomes his palace. Remember, he was gifted a palace by King Hiram once Hiram heard that he'd taken over the city of Jebus. So that work is probably going on right now. Those houses are probably being modified. But he's also going to do this. Verse 1 continues. He prepared a place for the Ark of God and pitched a tent for it. So in his palace, which I believe archaeological indication is it was on the north end of this city of Jebus, now being called the city of David. It's the north end of it is about, I think, a little over 200 yards south of the south wall of the Temple Mount. There is a great big building in that section of this ancient city. And the speculation is, and I think it's very good speculation, is that this is the palace region of David that was built up thanks to Hiram's man. And this is the courtyard area where David had this special awning, this special tent put up for the Ark of God to be placed under. Because in David's mind, God deserved to be in the new capital, in the palace of the king. Continuing, verse 2. Then David said that no one but the Levites may carry the ark of God, for he who is has chosen them to carry the ark of he who is and to minister to him forever. So somebody's been doing some Bible study. Somebody's been doing some review. David, remember, would have been required to hand copy the entirety of the book of Deuteronomy, I think possibly all of the books of Moses, And so David was supposed to read from that hand copy every day of his life. And so he may have gone back in there and found one of those passages that talked about only a certain portion of the Levitical tribe can come into contact with the Ark of the Covenant. It has to be carried on its poles. And so once he gets that in his head, he tells everybody else, that's the only way we're going to do it. It has to be done exactly according to God's instructions. Verse 3. So David assembled all Israel at Jerusalem to bring up the ark of he who is to its place, which he had prepared for it. So once again, he puts out the call. Everybody that can, come to the new capital city. We're going to bring the ark of God from Perez Uzzah, somewhere to the north of Jerusalem, just a few miles. We're going to bring it the rest of the way to the capital city, to the special tent in the king's palace. So David gathered together the sons of Aaron and the Levites, of the sons of Kohath. He had Uriel the chief with 120 of his brothers, the sons of Merari, Asaiah the chief with 220 of his brothers, the sons of Gershom. Joel was the chief with 130 of his brothers. These are the three divisions of the Levites, based on the three sons of Levi. And then we have other names, and I'm not going to go through every last one of these names. It gives names of the heads of each of these units, along with the number that's involved with it. Verse number 12, you are the heads of the fathers' houses of the Levites. Consecrate yourselves, you and your brothers, so that you may bring up the ark of he who is the God of Israel to the place that I have prepared for it. Because you did not carry it the first time, he who is our God broke out against us. That's the Perez word there. He broke out against us because we did not seek him according to the rule. So David has totally repented, and he is now reminding everyone, it wasn't God's fault, it was our fault. We did it wrong. We're the reason why Uzzah is dead, not God. And so we're going to do it right this time around. Get yourselves completely purified according to the word of God, because we will not have any more violations of his rules for carrying the Ark of the Covenant. Verse 14, so the priests and the Levites consecrated themselves to bring up the Ark of he who is the God of Israel, and the Levites carried the Ark of God on their shoulders with the poles as Moses had commanded, according to the word of he who is. And I want you to use your imagination to picture the Ark of God again. Do not think about it as a decorated storage box. That's unfortunately the way it's presented in a lot of the portrayals we have in our books, in our movies, and things like that. I want you to think of the carrying poles going along the short sides, because the ark was actually a sedan chair. It was to represent God seated on a portable throne, moving from place to place. The two cherubim on each end of the mercy seat is like the seat of the throne. The cherubim are four-faced, four-winged angelic beings that are represented in gold here. And we know that two of their wings, so a pair of wings on each end, go up and over the top of the mercy seat so that it forms a canopy over this throne. And so that's how you should picture it. And so they are picking this up and carrying it on their shoulders as if God were seated upon that throne and moving forward toward the palace in the new capital city. Now, another long section about some of the participants for this parade. David also commanded the chiefs of the Levites to appoint their brothers as the singers who should play loudly on musical instruments, on harps and lyres, on cymbals, to raise sounds of joy. So we want lots of happy music, David says, which makes sense. David is really into music. So the Levites appointed Heman, the son of Yoel, we already saw Yoel mentioned earlier, and his brothers, Asaph, the son of Berechiah, and the sons of Merari, their brothers, Etan, the son of Kushiah. And so these guys are kind of the leaders of this praise band. And then you have a big, long list of the people involved in the music and in the singing, and you'll even see Obed-Edom's name in there. Obed-Edom doesn't just simply get involved in the music. Down in the end of verse 24, it says that Obed-Edom and Jehiah were to be gatekeepers for the ark. So once the Ark of the Covenant is in position underneath that tent in the palace of David, in the city of David, Obed-Edom, who has been blessed by having the Ark at his house for the last 3 months, is going to be involved in access to this special worship site. Verse 25. So David and the elders of Israel and the commanders of thousands went to bring up the Ark of the Covenant of He Who Is from the house of Obed-Edom with rejoicing. And because God helped the Levites who were carrying the Ark of the Covenant of He Who Is, they sacrificed 7 bulls and 7 rams. Now there's a little bit more detail about this sacrifice over in 2 Samuel 6. Let me read it to you. 2 Samuel 6, starting at verse number 12. It was told to King David, he who has blessed the house of Obed-Edom, all that belongs to him, because of the Ark of God. So David went, he brought up the Ark of God from the house of Obed-Edom to the city of David with rejoicing. And when those who bore the Ark of He Who Is had gone 6 steps, he sacrificed an ox and a fattened animal. So when you put the two passages together, it would seem as if they did special sacrifices for the first few steps taken by the priests who were carrying the throne of God. And once they had atoned by that process for what they'd done the first time that was wrong, then the parade began in earnest. And we know that David was dancing and playing in this parade as well. It's mentioned there in 2 Samuel chapter 6, but we're going to go back over to 1 Chronicles 15, verse 27. David was clothed with a robe of fine linen, as also were all the Levites who were carrying the ark, and the singers, and Kenina, the leader of the music of the singers. David wore a linen ephod. So they are wearing special priestly-like clothing, all of them, including David, in celebration of God's throne coming to the capital city and everything being done according to his word. All Israel brought up the Ark of the Covenant of He Who Is with shouting to the sound of the horn and trumpets and cymbals, and they made loud music on harps and lyres. So everything's going according to plan. Everything is wonderful. Everything is beautiful. And as the Ark of the Covenant of He Who Is came to the city of David, Michal, the daughter of Saul, looked out the window and saw King David dancing and celebrating. Remember, they're bringing the Ark into the ancient city of Jebus through the front gate on the west side, the front gate that leads right straight to the plaza that the palace of King David is located off of, and where the tent is set up to receive the throne of God. And so the residence of David is right here. And so Michal, his first wife, is looking out the window as the parade arrives and passes into the city. And she sees David out there dancing like one of the celebrants of the parade. He's dressed up like all the other priests and Levites. He's not dressed like a king. He's not wearing his crown. And this leads to this reaction on her part. She despised him in her heart. Now, why does she now hate him? Because remember, they were in love when they were younger. When he first married her, she loved him very much, and he her. She saved him, helping him escape from her father in the middle of the night. And that's only been about 10 years ago that all happened. But there's been, as we say, a lot of water under the bridge since then. For reasons we don't fully understand, David never came and rescued her. She ends up being forcibly divorced by her dad from David and remarried to somebody else. David starts remarrying other women, and eventually, 4 years after she helped him escape her father, he basically forces her to divorce her second husband and come back into a household where there are multiple other wives of David. And I think all of that contributes to her anger at this very moment.